Today's program is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, a co-working and event space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. Last month, Hurricane Florence walloped parts of North Carolina. According to the Weather Channel, it was the wettest tropical storm to ever hit the Tar Heel State. So how did the restaurant industry respond? Some helped FEMA weather the storm, while others got to work feeding people on the ground.
We just walked in and said, we know how to cook, what can we do? They said, I need you guys to just cook 150 pork loins, and we were just like, okay.
Now the attention needs to be on Florence's long-term effect on North Carolina's farming community.
The general mood of farmers is one of certainly resilience and almost feels like it's the normal course of business to just get hit by a gigantic hurricane and need to just keep on going.
So tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Guest is Daniel Jonas. Daniel, I just treated to some pizza from Roberta's, and he dropped it on his pants, but that's okay. That won't screw the show up. We'll talk to Daniel today about wine, of course, champagne, La Fête du Champagne, Pressoir wine, and more. We'll taste the Gamay from, and help me here, Daniel, the Coteau de Lyonnais. Coteau de Lyonnais for our weekly wine sip. Daniel was gracious enough to bring that in. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Daniel Jonas is the multi-award winning wine impresario. I like to call him an impresario, and you'll see why. Sommelier, creator of La Fête du Champagne, Pressoir Wine, and La Palais, among other things. He's the corporate wine director for Daniel Boulud's Dinex Restaurant Group. He's a wine importer, and he's been an entrepreneur for many years. Our friend Jay McInerney dubbed Daniel Jonas the Dean of American Sommeliers, mentoring a generation of wine people. And one thing that you will find out is Daniel is a true Francophile, for sure, and a Burgundian lover beyond.
Yeah, I'm going to be correcting your French quite a bit.
I suck
your
at this.
Accent's
and
a
you'll explain
off.
Why you know so much French. All right, welcome back to the Grape Nation, Daniel.
Thank you.
I asked you to come back on because you have a lot of very cool things going on, and I wanted to discuss those things with you. But before that, while I have you tied to your chair, I want to tap into you for some wine intel and info. All right? You're okay with that?
I'm all set. Yeah.
All right. So, Beaujolais seems to be blowing up. I don't know if that's me.
Let's call it Beaujolais.
Beaujolais. Okay. Yeah. So, there's correction.
Let's start there.
There's correction number one. Beaujolais. and tell me if I'm imagining this. I know it's always been great, and there's been great producers and all of that, but it just seems to be, you know, happening right now. Is that fair to say?
Well, it's fair to say. I mean, it's been happening for me for quite a few years. I love Beaujolais. We drink a lot at the house, and you know, it's a wine of pleasure. You can just pull the cork, enjoy it. It's light. It's aromatic. It's got texture. It's absolutely delicious, and it has history. And it's also one of the most beautiful regions you can visit in France.
So it's got
a lot going for it. The image has been tainted a little bit over the years because of Beaujolais Nouveau. We all know about that. But there's a young generation of winemakers in Beaujolais now. that have learned from the parents, who have learned from the godfathers of Beaujolais, who made serious wine. In fact, when I say serious wine, I happen to have a few bottles of Moulin Vent, one of the Cru Beaujolais, from a specific vineyard, 1929.
Wow.
That came out of a cellar, and it's still good today. So it could be age-worthy wine, delicious wine, serious wine.
So give people just a little history. Beaujolais is considered part of Burgundy?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's
tell me that and get into the grape.
If you talk about Burgundy with Beaujolais producers, they do consider themselves sort of administratively part of Burgundy, but it's different. It's the Gamay grape, so it's different. In Burgundy, of course, for the red wines, right. It's Pinot Noir. So in Beaujolais, the vinification's different with carbonic maceration or semi-carbonic maceration.
Explain what that is.
Well, carbonic maceration is intercellular fermentation that starts with the berries are not crushed. The fermentation starts before any juice is released.
How do you do that?
They put it in a tank with the whole bunches of grapes. They cover
whole
it
berry.
And protect it
right.
until it warms up to a point where it starts the fermentation. And then it breaks open and starts to ferment. But there are
versus crushing.
Yeah, and there are different methods of fermentation right. in Beaujolais today, also more traditional Burgundian methods. But Beaujolais today is really exciting because you have these young winemakers who are not just making really good wine, but they're also focusing on the terroir, the land. And there's a real movement today in all wine regions of the world on protecting their heritage, and that is protecting the vineyards, reducing or chemicals, reducing treatments, and practicing organic or biodynamic viticulture. Now, it's very, very traditional in Beaujolais, and this is really a recent phenomenon.
And in Burgundy to some extent, too.
Well, Burgundy's ahead of Beaujolais in that respect. A lot
they
of people
are. So Beaujolais is coming up to that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the Gamay grape is, they always said that Pinot Noir and Burgundy, the grapes are very finicky. Is Gamay easier to work with or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, but I think that Gamay, a well-made Gamay, is a grape that has a smile on its face from the moment it's picked.
Okay. So it's a very happy
and
grape.
And Pinot Noir keeps you guessing for a while.
Okay.
All right? And it sometimes reveals itself, sometimes doesn't, sometimes goes through a lot of changes. And I think the Gamay is a little bit more direct.
So the fun, easy choice is Gamay.
Well, I mean,
it's very enjoyable and it's also a lot less.
And you know, you have to think also, okay, it's a different grape variety from Burgundy. It's not Pinot Noir, it's Gamay. But if you're looking for the kind of wine that is more accessible, like Pinot Noir can often be, Burgundy, it's a great alternative.
Right.
Although prices are creeping up all over, Beaujolais is still a great, great value.
Now, are prices creeping up to my original point that it's sort of a thing now or it's as popular now as it's ever been? Does that push pricing up in restaurants and wine stores?
Well, I mean, popularity pushes prices up because of supply and demand.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's still terrific value in Beaujolais.
There is.
And, you know, think about Beaujolais as straight Beaujolais, Beaujolais Village, and then you have the Cru Beaujolais.
How many Crus are there? Nine?
Ten. And there is an interesting movement in Beaujolais right now near Régnier in a commune called Lantigny.
Now, Régnier is R-E-G-N-I-E.
With an accent on
Régnier.
The last E there.
Okay.
And there's a little village, Lantigny. There's a group of young growers who are getting together and saying they want to create sort of a pact that we want to call this Beaujolais Village Lantigny, and anybody who has that appellation on the label will have to adhere to organic practices and certain methods, limited yields. It hasn't been approved yet, but I expect that to surface in the next 2 to 3 years.
So two things. One, spell it so that people...
Lantigny?
Yeah.
Lantigny.
Nobody would have gotten that.
No.
All right, so that's Lantigny, and they're in the process of getting their own designation.
Yeah, I'm sort of giving away a little inside information
that's
here.
Very
Nothing's
cool.
really happened yet, but you'll see it soon.
Now, we talked earlier about putting you on the spot, but can you give me a couple of faves or some recommendations for good accessible
Beaujolais
makers and all that?
It's really pretty easy.
Go ahead.
You know, because I drink a lot of it. But and there are some of the standard classics that go back for a couple of generations, such as Marcel Foyard, Marcel Lapierre, Jean Foyard.
Foyard, Pierre, Marcel Lapierre.
Breton.
Right.
You know, I mean, these are part of the original ones that Kermit Lynch brought in.
Right.
And then you have this new generation. You have their children now making wine also. But then you have really interesting, there's David Chappelle and Michelle Smith, young couple, David Chappelle, the son of the great chef Alain Chappelle, who was in Mionnet, not very far from Beaujolais, had great relationships with Marcel Lapierre. And they established an estate there, and they're going to be making Beaujolais Village, Julienas, Morgon, Regnier. They're going to be really experimenting. So, you know, but besides them, you have Jean-Louis Dutrèves, who's become one of the stars, and he's gone back quite a ways.
Those are all good producers, and I'll post them on our social media.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, there are a lot of women winemakers also now.
In Beaujolais?
Yeah. I mean, Michelle Smith, she's an American and married to David Smith.
Right.
And Mae Godard.
Right,
M-E-E-G-O-D-A-R-D.
Right.
Exactly.
Right, and good stuff?
Good stuff. There's really a lot of action.
Okay, so there's a lot of... So, I believe it. That's why I brought up with Daniel. Daniel drinks it every night. Beaujolais is something that's delicious, something you should be drinking, and there's a lot of variety and diversity. So I'm glad we addressed that. Now I want to move to champagne, which is equally as hot and crazy. There's more champagne in restaurant wine lists than ever before.
Yeah, it's great.
There were always fans, but they seem to be talking about it. We'll talk about Le Fate in a few minutes. But tell me, you're in and out of France and Burgundy and Beaujolais a lot. Tell me about some good things going on in Champagne. I don't know exactly the question to ask, but what's good going on in Champagne? What's new? Well, what changes?
You know, I sort of look at Champagne as an area. It's a historic area, one of the great wine regions of France. Terrific big houses and great brands. There's been a movement over the last 10, 15 years of grower champagne. You see a lot of that now.
Tell people what a grower champagne.
What that means is the growers, the grape growers, instead of selling the grapes off to the négociant houses, the big houses such as Moët & Chandon, for example, keep the grapes, produce it themselves, put their own name on it, just like they do in Burgundy. And so this was historically done in Burgundy also until they started estate bottling. So now we have estate bottling champagne that's been very popular, very effective. And it's also directed the conversation about champagne towards the land again. Just like in Burgundy, you talk about the terroir and the appellations and the nuance and the different expressions of terroir. So today, whether it be a Blanc de Blanc, which is 100% Chardonnay wine, or a Blanc de Noir, red grapes, Pinot Meunier, Pinot Noir, it's the location they're grown that is impacting the profile of the wine. So it's really fascinating to be there and also to listen to the producers, almost like the enthusiasm and the spirit and the discovery that you found in Burgundy 15 years ago.
Right.
So it's really exciting place to be now, really exciting wine to discover. And there's so many different champagnes in the market that you can choose from.
So a producer who's growing Pinot Meunier, because he's in an area that's best for that, he's a grower and he's making predominantly, Meunier-based stuff. There's more of that going on.
Well, you got that. And, you know, you can still blend in champagne.
Right.
So you have a lot of the blends of Pinot Meunier, Pinot Noir, and Chardonnay, or those focusing on just one of the grape varieties.
Now, were a lot of these guys were growing and providing the grapes for the big houses and switched over to bottling their own stuff. Have a lot of guys popped up or go into business take over land to produce grower champagne? I mean, what was the metamorphosis there?
Yeah. Well, to give you an example, there's a grower that I work with. His name is Guillaume Sergent. Small production. He's got...
Spell his last name.
It's like Sergeant.
Okay, you know,
like
Sergent.
Right. And he's got... his family had vineyards, and they would produce the grapes and sell them off to Negociant. He inherited 1.5 hectares of the vines. Now he has 3 hectares. He's bottling himself. He's producing biodynamically. So this is an example of a new generation saying, hey, I want to, you know, I see what my neighbors are doing. I see what my friends are doing. I see what the young generation is doing. I want to do
and
that.
And even expand it a little, picked up a little extra property.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, champagne requires long aging. So it's not easy. The cash flow is slow in champagne. It's an expensive production. And it's remarkable what value it provides, because champagne really is still not that expensive. You can get a great bottle for $40, $50. You may say that's money, but that's still something that's aged for 18, 24 months or longer before.
Don't look at it as a celebratory thing, which a lot of people do with champagne. Look at it as a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
That pairs well. Champagne pairs well with a lot of stuff. $40, $50 rivals any... You know, French, American,
well,
Italian.
You know, as they say with Burgundy, Pinot Noir goes with anything. Champagne goes with anything. You know, it's just it's very versatile. And you do see it on a lot of tables, by the glass. And it's unfortunate when people say, well, let's celebrate and have a bottle.
Right.
Sure, celebrate with a bottle of champagne. But that's not what it's only for.
Right.
Yeah.
So you said $40, $50 range. Tell me some producers worth looking out for.
Well, you know, a lot of the producers produce different cuvées, different blends and bottlings. And most of them do have an entry level, whether it be some of the big houses, such as Roederer or Boulanger, et cetera, or some of the grower champagnes, such as Fred Savard or Raphael Beresh.
Right.
You know, these are some well-known producers who
produce an entry-level
champagne that is produced with the same care, the same treatment in the vineyard, and you know, it's not going to be the same intensity and depth of flavor that you're going to find in a longer age champagne before it's bottled in one of their special cuvées.
But it's coming from a great producer,
exactly.
A great winemaker, and the place in terroir.
You know, I always like
terrific.
To tell people that you have to not just look at the famous name, like champagne as a general category. You have to look at wine as an artisanal product. It's made by craftsmen. And so if you're buying a car and you happen to like Mercedes, then that's what you buy. If you like Louis Vuitton, if you like a certain brand of shoes. But if you like a wine that you've tasted made by, let's just say, Fred Savart, then feel free to try more of his different wines, because you might find a house style there that you like.
Right.
Always look at the name of the producer, and then you have confidence there. You can have confidence on something more expensive or rare or basic even. As in Burgundy, when you have a producer like Jean-Marc Rouleau in Meursault, one of the greatest white wine producers
R-O-U-L-O-T.
In the world,
right.
R-O-U-L-O-T. Of course, his Meursault Perrier and his Meursault Luché and some of his vineyard designated wines are great. But he's putting a lot of care into his Aligoté, Bourgogne-Blanc, very simple appellations that are absolutely worth looking for.
Yeah. So go back to Savard for a second. Size-wise, as a producer, small, medium, large?
Small, medium.
Small, medium.
Yeah.
He's a grower. Okay, so what you're saying is, here's a guy, great artisan craftsman, small to medium guy. He's showing 6, 8, 9 different bottlings?
No,
five,
not that
four
many.
Four or five?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So to your point, try his entry level, you fall in love with it, you like the style, he's got a lot more to offer. And other guys have even more.
Yeah, I think that's the case everywhere. When you're discovering something, whether it be in a restaurant or wine, or in a retail store, and you're not familiar with, always try the entry level. Or take a leap of faith if you trust your merchant or your sommelier. I always encourage people to make friends with the sommelier because...
Right. You know, those are the guys that are...
You know, slip him a $100 bill. And,
right.
You know,
and then he'll give you everything.
He's got
But people, you know, I've had the best sommeliers in here, and people tend to be intimidated, and that's sort of gone away. People realize these guys know more than anyone, and they're bringing in by the glass or bottles that you'll never see anywhere else. Yeah. So trust your sommelier, and also a good wine store, you know, in the neighborhood or whatever.
I think it's important.
All right, so that's champagne. Now,
well,
we have,
let me. I just want to just ahead. Add to champagne. You know, my interest in champagne grew out of, well, my basic interest in Burgundy and the sort of the mentality in Burgundy of the grape variety and the place and the tradition. And when I saw this movement in champagne, I took a great deal of interest in saying, "Hey, champagne's made with the same grape varieties you find in Burgundy, mainly Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. Of course, you have some others, but." I went there and I was overwhelmed by how I was embraced, and I saw a similar spirit of generosity
in champagne
that I see in Burgundy. So,
but frame that for me, because I've heard you say this before. I've heard you make a comparison to Burgundy and Bordeaux, and the comparison is Burgundy is really vignerons. There are guys that you go and see, you know, a rouleau, you know, who's in the cellar and a walk out in the field, where Bordeaux, there's this aristocratic, all of that.
I have to be a little careful. I'm going to Bordeaux on Saturday for a week. And
they're not listening to that.
I don't want anybody to say, hey, I heard
but
you.
But there is a comparison between the vibe. Burgundy, yeah. The connection, which I think is something you relish from the
beginning. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see a recent photo that I took of the hands of a winemaker in Burgundy. They were stained red.
Right. That's the point.
They just finished harvest. And they, you know who's working, who's not. And I'm sure that next week when I go to Bordeaux, I'm not going to see any stained hands.
You'll see some nice suits probably and all that, right? Some nice shoes.
It's okay. And there'll be some great wine.
Yeah, but it's a good point. And I think that's what's still charming about Burgundy, you know, is as much as going on there. So let's talk about Burgundy a little. I mean, you're truly, you know, I think Burgundy is your thing. But we know Burgundy's become expensive, highly allotted, hard to get. So I don't want to talk about that.
Okay.
I want to talk to you, and we sort of covered it a little. I mean, Gamay touches that. But I want to talk to you about the great Burgundy values that are accessible, that are overachievers, you know, reasonable in price, worth drinking now. And I think that comes down to certain regions and producers. I don't think there's anybody better to ask that question to than you.
Well, I think Burgundy is extraordinary in that way that it can produce wines at such a wide range of flavor, intensity, and cost today. Just last week, there was a bottle of Romani Conti 1945 that sold for over $500,000 for one bottle.
That's crazy.
Okay? That kind of wine represents a fraction of 1% of the production of Burgundy. What Burgundy represents is a whole range below that of other Grand Cru that are expensive as well, Premier Cru that are great and expensive, village-level wines, meaning wine made in a village such as Meursault or Gevry-Chambertin or Moray-Saint-Denis without the designation of a single vineyard. And then you have regional wines, such as Côte de Nuit Village. And these are grapes grown over several villages, a coalition of villages, if you like, that can all be called Côte de Nuit Village. And there are some producers there today who are making outstanding wine.
Tell me.
Camille Thierrier, T-H-I-E-R-E-T, young woman.
Thierrier, okay.
Just making her third vintage. Didier Fornerol has become a bit of a superstar in the world of people who are looking for really soulful Burgundies made in, you know, moderate quantity, very small quantities, actually.
So is Fornerol making a $40, $50,
$60? Oh, I think it's less.
Really?
I think it's probably $30, $40.
Okay. That's great news.
Yeah, great stuff. But, you know, and during La Palais, we host an event during the week called the Off-Grid Tasting. And we bring together the lesser-known appellations of Burgundy, the Haussée-Durrès, the Saint-Romain, the wines from the Mâconnais, from Mâcon, wines from the Chalonnais, Rouy, Montagny, Givry, et cetera, Mercure.
Good stuff.
Bouzeron. Excellent.
Excellent.
Again, it comes down to the craftsman, the producer.
Right.
And we're selecting producers who make great wine at higher appellations, but also these entry-level, lesser-known wines. For example, Pinot Vergeles. It's a very difficult name to you know, most consumers are intimidated by it, Pinot Vergeles. But it's one of those appellations that's what I call off the beaten path and makes really good wine. It's right next to Alos Corton.
Right.
And Corton, of course, is very well known.
Right. So there is definitely as many opportunities to drink good Burgundy now.
Oh, you can drink great Burgundy from $20 and, you know, up to $500,000.
Right. What about any other... I don't know if I can ask you this. Are there any other regions outside of what we discuss that are exciting you? Oh. The funny thing to me is I get the Burgundy-Bordeaux comparison.
Yeah, well...
But Italy, there's a lot of guys with grape juice dried on their hands.
Yeah, I love Italy.
Tell me, there any other places or wines that are exciting you?
You know, people know me for Burgundy because of my history there at Montrachet Restaurant and La Pole, et cetera. Right. But when I first went to France in 1974... I went to Provence in the Southern Rhone, not too far from Châteauneuf-du-Pape. And that's where I started to learn about wine and winemaking and vineyards and so on. And my first tastes of wine were really Côte du Rhône Village, Gigondas, and Châteauneuf-du-Pape, and so on. So the Rhone has been a very important place for me, not just the South, but also the North. We're going to be doing an event on Northern Rhone, not Northern Rhone, but the entire Rhone,
right.
Next February, called La Table. And La Table is named after the festival that they do in Côte Rôti.
Right.
That's modeled after La Pole.
Right.
So it's an extension of that. But the Rhone is an area where you can get extraordinary value in the South, all over.
The South and, more than the North?
Well, I think so.
Right now, yeah.
Right now you can, yeah. Because you have such a big region.
I agree with
and
you.
Grenache is widely planted, Côte du Rhône, basic appellation. But in the North also, with Vin de Pays de Colline Rodanienne. Repeat that after me, please.
I can.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of...
I can't. So the Côte du Rhône is another favorite. And we'll talk about La Table in a little bit. All right. Before we move on to other things, a lot of the events that you're doing, I just want to ask you a couple of quick questions. You've been on the wine scene. I don't want to age you because you're in good shape. You're a cyclist. You're fit. You've been on the wine scene for over 35 years.
Is it 35? Wow.
Easily.
Oh, yeah.
Early 80s.
You've been counting, huh?
Yeah. I had to use a calculator. The biggest obvious changes to you. I know the market's gotten competitive, more somms, but what, you know, without spending the rest of the show on it, what pops into your head about, you know, the changes that you've seen and experienced?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes has been the price of wine, and that really does... age me, because I don't want to be the person who says, "Oh, I remember when I used to buy Chateau Patrice for $20 a bottle." But, you know, what it has done is changed.
You did at Montrachet. You bought Burgundy for $20.
Oh, I mean, I don't even want to make people right. jealous listening. I mean, we would have like Roumier by the glass. And
so that's a change.
So that's a big change.
Your first thing was price.
But it's not just the price. That makes sense, because the demand worldwide is much greater now. But it's the mentality that's changed because of the price.
Rather
than drinking a great bottle of Bud Mar or Musigny from Roumier fairly easily, it becomes much more of a thought process and much more of a struggle for a lot of people. First of all, to attain these wines, and then there are expectations when you spend that much money on something. Expectations. You spend that much money on a car, you expect it to go fast.
Right.
So you expect that much money on a bottle of wine, then I think it alters the expectation and the experience of just drinking and enjoying the wine.
So there's a lot of pressure,
yeah.
you know, on all that.
Yeah,
and not that it's a major thing, but throw in counterfeiting the last eight years.
I don't want to get into that. But the other thing that's really changed that's remarkable is... the level of knowledge of the consumer today in relation to what it was 30, 35 years ago. And back then, people were still drinking cocktails. They were ordering Chablis, meaning I'll have a glass of any white wine you have. But people are very sophisticated today. And they're willing to try wines from all over the world. So it's really a dynamic. It's a golden age.
Does social media play into that? Is there more discovery? You could follow a psalm.
Totally.
Is that definitely why people
great.
Are more informed?
I think. I think that's part of it. Social media is very powerful.
Everything's blowing up, and that that's part of it.
Yeah.
All right. Before we take a break, one thing I didn't dwell on was, all the awards that you've won. You've won James Beard Awards, multiple. You've won...
Three times.
Outstanding Wine Person Program. You've won an award from the French government, a Wine Spectator, stuff. Of all the awards, does anything mean anything to you today? I know then they did, but when you...
Look, anytime you're recognized, it's flattering. It's a validation of what you've been doing, validation from a community, whether it be peer community or outside, et cetera. So, it's a great feeling. I think it was Drew Nieperent who was getting a lot of press in the early days. He still gets a lot of press, but he said, don't believe your press. And it resonated with me because I think people, once they start believing all the accolades and they get a big head over it, then you lose focus. And maybe it's an insecurity on my part, but I never feel like I've achieved anything yet.
Keeps you going.
So it keeps me striving to finally one day achieve something. But the
so
one
you're validated,
award,
but you're a little uncomfortable still and pushing
the
forward.
One award that really moved me greatly was the award from the French government, the Crédit Agricole, the Mérite Agricole, for a contribution to French agriculture, of which wine plays a part. So that was very...
That was recently, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. That was a nice
Just
award.
Explain what that was. That was sort of an agricultural...
Well, the government gives all kinds of... French, they give a lot of awards.
They want excuses to hug.
No, there's... Well, the Légion d'honneur is the most recognized. That is the ultimate award of recognition by the French government, and it's for all industries. You could be in the film industry, you could be in the wine, you could be all kinds of recognition. The Mérite Agricole means a recognition for your contribution to the agricultural well-being of France.
Right.
And that's because of my history as a sommelier, talking, selling French wine, importing French wine, talking about French wine, and so on. So
getting close to the producers, the land, and all of that.
So that was meaningful.
So that's the one. All right, we're talking to Daniel Jonas. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Daniel has a lot of stuff going on, and I want to discuss that with him. So you're listening to The Grape Nation. We'll be right back.
Bogart has made much progress over the past year since their grand opening. They are a growing community of professional freelancers, entrepreneurs, and startups. Their dedicated team guarantees you receive a productive and worry-free work environment. 100 Bogart is currently filling up their 2-person to 12-person private offices. The spacious pop-up gallery, premier rooftop, and brand new full floor with terrace are available for your next event. Podcast rooms, conference rooms, and meeting spaces are also available for booking. 100 Bogart hosts events like art exhibitions, pop-up stores, product launches, and fashion shows. Heritage Radio Network is a proud member of the 100 Bogart community and often holds events in the building. Visit 100bogart.com to schedule a tour and learn more.
All right, we're back. We're back on The Grape Nation, and we are talking to my guest, Daniel Jonas. And Daniel just laid a lot of knowledge and recommendations on some great wines. I will post those on our social media. Now, Daniel's got a lot up his sleeve, and one of the reasons I asked him back is he has a very cool event coming up. It's called La Fête du Champagne. It's taking place in New York City, November 8th through the 10th. It's presented by Daniel and Peter Leem, champagne expert. So first thing, explain what La Fête du Champagne is. Then explain why you did it. and then we'll talk about the elements of it.
Well, La Fête du Champagne is really...
Isn't that
just
what I said?
Yeah, well, sort of. I'm trying to discreetly correct your pronunciation. Sorry.
It's okay. From you, I could take
it. I'm not rubbing it in your face. But, yeah, the idea came out of what I was saying earlier, my enthusiasm for champagne, and sort of mirroring what I saw in Burgundy years ago, and the respect for the terroir and the enthusiasm and the how dynamic the growers were and so on. And the similarities in the grape varieties and the expression and the interest in the terroir. So I called my friend Peter Liam, and who is, I don't think there's any greater authority on champagne than Peter Liam. He just came out recently, very recently.
We had him on.
Oh, you had him on? Okay, great.
To talk about his book, Champagne.
Yeah, and he couldn't be here today. He was going to be here today, but
we invited him.
Where is he? Taipei?
He's in Singapore, I think.
Singapore?
Yeah.
He's somewhere. He
wouldn't get up early.
Well, he wrote me, well, it's 5 a.m. there, but he wrote me earlier today and said, say hello to everybody and apologize that he couldn't be here.
Yep.
Because he just left yesterday. He'd been on the plane for 24 hours.
Right.
So 5 years ago, I said, hey, Peter, let's get together and have lunch. And I shared this idea with him that I'd like to do a celebration of champagne similar to what we do with La Polée, which we had already been doing for 15 years. And he said, yeah, he wanted to do that also. And I said, but I can't, I don't want to do that on my own, because I know something about champagne, but I don't know what you know about champagne. And I'd like to share this stage with you. And he thought about it and said, well, you know, and I don't have the team that you have and the knowledge of producing an event like that and the relationships with, I mean, my relationship's very fortunate to have with the chefs and the clientele and the sommelier community. So he said, yeah, I think this could be a really good partnership. And that's what happened. So we did the first one. What year was that? 14, I think, 2014?
New York,
and we did New York again in 15. Yep, and then 16. And then we went to London last year. We wanted to take it on the road. And now we're back in New York this year in November 8th to the 10th.
I assume that you learn and it grows each year.
Yeah, you learn, and you certainly learn, and word gets out, and there you learn how many people love champagne.
Right.
I mean, the grand tasting is just overwhelming.
They don't even realize they love it.
And you also learn how enthusiastic the Champenois are to share. I mean, we invite people and they say yes. You know, very rarely are we
so
turned
down. So let's talk about, you know, the fate, the elements and all of that. So I'll throw a bunch of things out and we'll take them apart. There's a grand tasting walk around where the makers are there, multiple producers. There's a fancy Saturday night dinner. There's seminars. There's winemaker dinners, right?
Right. We do several small events prior to the big day, which is the Saturday.
Tell me the important things.
Well, I mean, there are some things that are sold out very,
right.
very
so
quickly.
Right, so that's why I want you to focus on it.
But we always try to do, in addition to the grand tasting and the gala dinner, which is a big party and hundreds of bottles of champagne floating around.
Which people, guests bring too, right?
Right. They do for the gala dinner, just like the Polée. But we do several smaller events. For example, a dinner with Jean-Baptiste Le Caillon from Rotorua Champagne. And it's not going to be just Cristal. We're going to do a range of champagnes, a Blanc de Blanc, Rosé, some Brut Vintage, and several vintages of Cristal, including the 2008, which is just released.
So that's one of the dinners.
That's one.
Leading into the weekend.
Yeah. It's sold out, but sorry for mentioning it. But another one that's sold out, I have to tell you about, just because it's incredible. Rodolphe Peters is bringing Magnums of Les Chétillons, which is his top cuvée from Le Ménil, back to 1970, and the last Magnums in his cellar.
Jesus.
That's it. There's no more. This will never be done again.
Once in a lifetime experience.
So if anything opens up, you know, get your name on the wait list. But there's a lunch that is really spectacular that we're going to be doing, and that's going to be at Racine. It's called the Déjeuner Champenois.
Arnaud and Pascaline's place,
yeah,
one of the
yeah,
great
yeah, yeah.
wine bars in New York.
Yeah. That's going to be That's something where there's still a few seats, okay. But it's going to be a fun, upbeat, really exciting lunch with you know, producers. And the whole idea is to have the producers interact with the guests.
So there's some tickets available.
Yeah, there's
we'll
some
tell everybody
there.
Where to go. I mean, we're only a few weeks out, so.
Yeah, well, it's coming. So you can go to.
What about the Grand Tasting?
Well, the Grand Tasting, you know, it's a big room at Pier 60. There's still space. It's,
okay.
It's
so you
filling
could buy,
up.
You could buy a ticket, and I've been there. You walk around the room, and the producers are there at their own tables, and you get to taste multiple selections.
Yeah, there's still about 100 different wines.
You won't get a better, you know, selection of tastings and all of that. What else is there?
Well, the gala dinner, and that's really the premier dinner. Daniel Boulou, Arnaud Lallemand, 3 Michelin star restaurant.
Michael White.
From Champagne, Michael White.
Right.
And Charles Knappett from London. Really good.
Who's the guy from Champagne, the famous place?
Arnaud Lallemand.
Right.
Great guy.
What's the place?
Assiette Champenoise.
Right. That's it.
And 3 Michelin star, really, he's one of these chefs like Danielle who loves wine and is very respectful of the wine. And she's a great chef and a bon vivant.
Are there tickets available for okay.
Yeah, we still have some.
All right,
we still have some space.
Before we get ahead of ourselves, the best place for people to go to get information and to buy tickets is.
Well, lafetteduchampagne.com.
LAFETEDU Champagne.com. Right. I've been on the site many times. It'll list the individual events. Obviously, it'll tell you what's sold out. It'll tell you the multitude of events and all of that. And that is November 8th through the 10th, which you must be a little on edge because that's around the corner.
Around the corner, just after I get back from Bordeaux.
Okay. All right. So that's La Fête. If you have an interest in champagne, you're a champagne lover, that's the beauty of Daniel John is he'll put in a bunch of different rooms and a bunch of different days, a lot of opportunities to experience champagne like you've never experienced before. All right. The next thing that interested me and is timely, I wanted to bring you in for La Fête, is a thing that you've launched called Pressoir Wine, Pressoir.
Correct.
Wine, and
it's Pressoir dot wine.
Dot wine.
Yeah.
And it looks to me like things are really kind of up and happening now, you know, in the last less than a year. So tell me about, it's an interesting concept. Tell me what you're doing there.
Well, you know, it came out of, we do these events, La Fête du Champagne, La Polée, once a year, where I have a team who works year-round on these,
setting really, everything up, getting setting producers.
Everything
up.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a big, it's a
locations,
big job.
Right.
It's a big job, and the team's great. But I also felt that we don't want to get complacent with that. We love wine, also. We don't want to just be producing and being robotic about it. So it was an idea that I had. The image of pressoir, which is the French word for grape press. Was that if you take grapes and press them, the juice flows out and evolves into these myriad aromas and flavors that you find in wine. And so I thought that we could do something, take what we have, these extraordinary relationships with the growers, with the chefs, with the sommelier community, over 100 sommeliers work these various events with us, and give a platform. So Pressoir is really a platform for us and other people to communicate about wine. We do these sessions, which are...
So talk about the elements.
Well, the elements are we have sessions, which are 12 people coming to taste 6 or 7 or 8 wines.
Thematically. Tell me what you did
last night. Last night we did Northern Rhone with Matt Conway.
Who's a Northern Rhone aficionado,
yeah,
sommelier.
We invite sommelier friends who are experts in a field to come in and talk about their area of expertise. So he came in and talked about Northern Rhone.
And you opened what? 6, 7, 5, 8 bottles?
We had great wines. Right. Thierry Allemand from Cornell. And Shah from Hermitage, and Clouzel Rock from Côte Rôti, etc. And so Peter Liam's going to come in and do one on Champagne. So we invite our friends to come in, and I lead sessions also. So that's one thing. Another thing is small dinners. And the small dinners, as opposed to the giant dinners we do with the Polée, it was a way for me to, in a way, get back into service and back in touch with the clientele. which after 35 years...
You selfish bastard.
I've walked away from.
You did it for yourself.
Yeah, I did. It was something that I've always enjoyed doing, serving, communicating, talking. And during La Palais, during La Fête, I can't talk to anyone.
Right, so big.
And so this is an opportunity for me to get back into serving wine, pulling cork, serving, talking to people about wine.
So now you got tastings, you got dinners.
Yeah, we got a club.
There's a club aspect to it. Explain what that
well,
is.
Well, the club gets various benefits. They get advance notice on some of the events, and they sell out quickly. They get priority seating. They get a sommelier to guide them around the tasting. They get offers, exclusive wine offers on wines for their sellers. So there are a number of benefits to being a club member. And also being part of a club is kind of a fun thing.
Right.
You know, you meet people, it's social. And wine is a lifestyle experience today.
And when you're picking the wines and you give people access to stuff that they're not always going to get.
Yeah, it's fun.
You know, it's a fun thing. You also offer services like consulting.
Exactly.
If you have a client that needs help.
Exactly.
Collection or wants to buy and all that, you'll do that too.
Exactly.
If people want to find out more about Pressoir Wine, tell me where they should go.
They go to www.pressoir.wine.
P-R-E-S-S-O-I-R.
Dot wine.
Not dot com.
Nope. Dot wine.
So the
we couldn't get the dot com.
On
we
Pressoir.
We could get
that,
dot
well, that
wine.
That works.
And it makes perfect sense. So.
All right. So La Fête de Champagne coming up November 8th through 10th. Go check out Pressoir Wine if you really want a camp counselor like Daniel Giannis.
We have Edouard Bourgeois also.
Right, who's a major part of the Pressoir.
Big, great sommelier.
All right, you got a couple other tricks up your sleeve. Let's talk about them. Next early spring, you're doing La Palais,
yeah,
which is your wheelhouse or the thing you started. That is when and where?
That's going to be here in New York, Pier 60, March 4th through the 9th. We have a huge program this year. It's taking up most of the week.
That's Daniel's Burgundian
celebration.
That's
all about Burgundy. And right. Just yesterday, another bit of inside information. Don't hold me to it, but it looks like we're going to extend it by one more day on the front end and really do a celebration of Gamay, Beaujolais.
Okay.
Focus on Beaujolais.
I'm loving that.
Yeah.
All right.
And we're thinking of calling
it. If people want to know more about that, how do they follow that?
Well, you know, you can follow all of this at pressoir.wine.
Okay. So Pressoir is the best place.
That's the platform.
Track this Gamay thing.
Yeah, it's for everything.
We open the show with Beaujolais, so yeah, you're focusing attention towards that. So that's exciting. What's the window on that? Have you decided?
For the
Gamay, for the Beaujolais thing.
Well, if we do it, we most likely will. It's going to be March 4th.
Okay. So we're talking...
That's a Monday.
Early next year, spring.
And then we'll follow that with the Polite right Polite after that.
Okay. And then the last thing, you mentioned it, not me. You're doing a Rhone thing?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me quickly about that.
Well, as I said, the Rhone is really important to me. And several years ago, a couple of the producers, one in the South... Isabelle Ferrandeau from Saint-Pré Fair, who's recently become a bit of a superstar. 2003 was her first vintage, but she's been hit after hit. And she said, oh, couldn't we do something like La Palais? And I said, well, you know.
So she inspired and instigated.
She did. That was about 5 or 6 years ago. And then Brigitte Rock from Clouzel Rock and Côte Rôtie spoke to me a couple of years ago and said, oh, it'd be great to do something. We'd love to do something in New York. And I said, well, you know, I'd love to do it. Let me think about it. It takes a little time. So she invited me to their celebration called La Table in Côte Rôtie. And it was there that they sort of prematurely announced that they were going to celebrate in New York with me. And I was really kind of taken aback. Okay. I said, oh, I guess we really are doing this.
You were on
so
the line then.
I kind of got pushed into it, but in a very joyful way.
That's good news.
So we're doing that on February 2nd.
Okay. And at the end, I'll tell people where they can follow you, too. And I know you post.
Yeah, well, you know, they can find out about all this at Pressoir.wine.
Pressoir is the best place.
Because each of these events will have their own website, but Pressoir.wine will have everything.
Okay, so that's where you're going to find out about Daniel's stuff. All right. We're going to move on to a thing called the wine list, which you did the last time you were here. Let's buzz through this. But this is the special La Fête du Champagne Champagne.
All right.
Addition. So all answers must be champagne related, okay? All right. So the first question, and these are the same questions we ask everybody. What are you drinking now? What in the champagne world? What's on your office desk? You're at home. What are you trying? Just now.
Right now?
Champagne-wise.
Raphael Bereche.
Okay. So B-E-R-E-C-H-E. And quickly, why?
Because I love the guy.
Okay. So you love the guy because you love the guy, you love his champagne.
Well, you got to understand, I don't drink wine that's not of great quality, no matter what.
And
it doesn't have
short.
To be expensive.
Right.
It doesn't have to be expensive, but it has to be great.
Right.
And so I take it another dimension, and that is I'm fortunate I get to know the winemakers. So people who I like, I want to support them. I want to drink their wine also.
And you mentioned Bereche earlier as one of those entry-level.
Great guy.
Not he's an entry-level wine, but he has an entry-level champagne. For
Fred Savard also, one of the greatest guys on the planet.
Right, give me Daniel Jonas's favorite champagne and food pairing.
Oh.
You're not allowed to say oysters and champagne.
Yeah.
Show rule. So give me the next one.
Oysters and champagne.
You can't say
it. No, I had that the other night with oysters, and we had a...
What else goes great with champagne?
We had some Celos champagne. Oh, everything. I mean, listen, I love...
So there's a good answer. No, everything goes with champagne. Fried foods.
Absolutely not everything. But yeah, fried foods are good for a variety of reasons. Kind of that effervescence cuts through the richness or the greasy of fried foods. But I'm more of a Blanc de Blanc drinker. I like the crispness, the freshness of the Chardonnay and from that region. I love,
the producer?
Yeah, the producer. I'm blanking out now.
Champagne?
Well, Salon. Salon is one of my,
Well, that favorite. I didn't get to that question yet.
Oh, okay.
That may be your answer. So
you got me drinking wine here, so I'm having these little gaps.
That's okay. Plus, you're eating pizza and you're going out to dinner, too. All right. Tell
Rodolphe
me.
Pierre Peters.
Pierre Peters.
Oh, my God.
And he's also going to be.
He'll be there.
He's doing one of the lunches.
Exactly.
That you said. All right. Tell me favorite wine restaurant or bar. Let's do New York. With good attention towards, with best attention towards champagne selection, service. Don't leave it. You're not leaving anyone out. You're not incriminating anybody by, But give me a couple of places that just do it right.
Well, whenever you list somebody, you're forgetting somebody else. But certainly Maya Lino's doing a great job.
Jenny Guzio is on top of the champagne game.
At the Martha Hotel.
Right.
You're getting great. There's a great emphasis among sommeliers who are loving champagne right now.
Give me one more.
I think over at Legacy,
brand new.
Yeah, they're doing some great
Robert
stuff.
Ford, not Ryan not, Hardy.
Yeah, not and and Arvid Rosengren, best
Arvid,
sommelier in the world.
Right.
And not just champagne, but across the board.
Right. But they have enough champagne. All right, those are good places. All right, do you have an all-time favorite champagne? One, two, if you can't put it to one, or there are a few things. And sometimes it's not the most expensive or the rare. It's an experiential thing, like when you got engaged or whatever. What can you think of as far as that champagne that's an all-timer to you?
Well, at the last Fête de Champagne in London, we had a Dom Ruinart 1964 that was another dimension.
When you say another dimension, what's there that makes
another dimension meaning that
it's still fresh?
Well, it was still fresh, but it was an evolved, fresh, yet still fresh, layered wine with a lot of complexity. It was a wine. And we think of champagne as champagne, but we have to remember that it's a wine.
Starts as a still wine.
And when it becomes this complex and this nuanced, it's what you find in an aged white Burgundy or an aged... It could have been a different color also, but it was so profound that it's a memorable.
So that's the 64 Ruinart. And now, what do you remember? Is it a Blanc de Blanc? Is it a blend?
It was a blend, yeah.
It was a blend, okay.
And it was one of those champagnes where you're just saying, this is different.
Right.
This is...
That's what I'm looking for. Yeah. All right, last question, and we kind of answered this during the show, but let's just tap into it again. I hate to use the word cheap, but what's the best value champagne? The question that exists on this list is best wine around $15 to $20. Give me a red and a white. We threw that out for what's the best value champagne. Is it Barèche?
No, I think that, honestly, something that people can find fairly easily is the Louis Roeder Brut.
Okay.
And
that's just a great...
I mean, Jean-Baptiste Le Gaillon is making extraordinary champagne on all levels, at all cuvées, and I think that his Brut Reserve is just great.
And
for
what
the
are
price.
We talking, range?
I'm not, you know, I don't really know retail prices, but I think it's going to be in the $45, $50.
Great bottle at that middle lower range and all of that. The Roederer Brut.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So those are Daniel's special edition La Fête du Champagne. See the way I said champagne, not champagne, because of Daniel. I'm embarrassed not to say that. We'll post those on our social media. I'll tell you where. All right, Daniel, we got about 5 minutes left. Every week we taste a different wine on air for our weekly wine sip. This week, I asked Daniel if he'd bring a wine in, and he brought a 2017 Coteau de Lyonnais Les Traboules.
Right.
Les Traboules from Guillaume Clouzel. Guillaume Clouzel.
Yeah.
All right, so tell me a little more about the wine, the grape, and the maker.
All right, this is an appellation that's only a couple of hundred hectares, so, you know, you're only talking about 400 or 500
acres. The whole appellation.
Yeah, really small.
Okay.
But it's outside of Lyon. It's west of Lyon, 100 kilometers or so. And Guillaume Clouzel is from Clouzel Rock and Cote Rôtie. He expanded into this area because he wanted to make... First of all, it's very hard to find vineyard land in Cote Rôtie and afford it. And he's a very dynamic young man who wants to make a name for himself. So he bought these vineyards, and it's from the Gamay grape. So it's very similar to Beaujolais in a lot of ways. There's some granite, and which you find is a soil component in Beaujolais. But... What's fun about this cuvée Traboule? Traboule comes from a word that you see in Lyon. Now, I spent a year in Lyon, and you can go visit the Traboule.
Your family there and live there.
But you can visit the Traboule, and the Traboule is a real thing in Lyon, architectural design in Lyon, that comes from historically, hundreds of years ago, Lyon was a silk weaving community, was the main industry there. And the silk weavers, the canu, would go from building to building. They would build these secret passageways to get through the buildings down to the Saône River. And those were called Traboule. And you could visit them now. It's like going through these secret passageways. Another interesting bit of trivia about that was during World War II, it was a way for people to get around town without being seen. You know, with the...
So as an homage to that, he named it Le Traboule.
So, yeah. Okay. And it's an absolutely delicious wine. Chill it down a little bit.
All right, so we're going to evaluate it quickly. Let's give it a sniff, and then we'll throw it over the tongue. So color, beautiful, like a deep magenta, you know, purple. Nice, beautiful color. Good clarity, right?
Very good.
All right. This is where I got to rely on you. Give me the nose descriptors.
Well, there's a floral component. I get like
very floral,
violets, and you know, summer flowers, but red flowers, rose, maybe.
Teeny bit of spice
also,
in there.
It's a little spice, but you also get like an explosion of strawberry, red fruit,
red berries for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe even a little, some raspberry, and then on the palate, you just get.
What? Give me mouthfeel first.
Yeah.
What's typically a mouthfeel on this? This is a. Nice, well, medium mouthfeel, mouthfilling. Not unctuous, but mouthfilling.
This is a wine that you could drink by the bucketful. It's fresh. By fresh, I mean there's a lively acidity. It's very vibrant. It keeps your palate like salivating.
Right.
You just want to sip more. It's probably about 12.5% alcohol. So it's very
drinkable.
Very light, but it still has some texture and presence on the palate.
All right, so let's talk palate. Does the palate replicate a lot of the nose, or
totally? This wine is totally imbalanced.
So you got those berries, it's raspberries.
Absolutely delicious, and you could. We're drinking this out of a D decent. You got to get some better glasses here. But
don't
I'm going to tell you,
such a snob, will you?
I can tell you.
Don't be that, such a. I had Aldo Soman here. He schlepped Zaltos on the subway in a bag.
What I'm going to say is not snobby because these are. I was going to say these are decent glasses, but this wine you could drink out of a tumbler and enjoy it.
So this is.
Yeah,
this,
you're doing okay with this.
Do
glass.
You have a ballpark on retail?
$22.
Oh, great price point. Yeah. So this is all right. Before we talk about whether we like it or not, just tell me what the good pairings with this wine is. Classic.
Anything.
Anything. No, you know, well, then the easier question is, what would you eat? Asparagus? Or?
No. It's not just with anything.
What's the key?
Like the perfect sausage wine.
Okay.
Grilled sausages. Hamburgers, a roast chicken.
Chicken, juicy red meat burger.
Totally.
Sausages.
I mean, you could grill a salmon. Now, salmon, I like something a little bit more elegant. Maybe a burgundy,
well,
a beautiful volnay, but this, you know,
all right.
Be happy.
Good recommendation. So, do we like this wine or do we love this wine?
Love it.
We love it for the price, value, the grape, and everything. So, that's the 2017 Coteau de Lyonnais Les Trabules from Guillaume
Cluzel.
All right, take it easy.
Yeah, you're getting better.
All right. All right, Daniel, we're wrapping the show up. We've done an hour, actually a little more. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Follow us on Facebook at our page, The Grape Nation. Follow us on Instagram at SBenRuby and the hashtag The Grape Nation. On Twitter at BenRuby. Also subscribe to The Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. I will post Daniel's wine list answers, the weekly wine sip that we just tasted, and a bunch of the other wines that he mentioned during the show on our social media sites, mostly Instagram and Facebook. Daniel, we pretty much talked about where we can get more information, pressoir.wine, La Fête du Champagne. And if we want to follow you, Daniel, and see you riding up and down hills on a bicycle, where do we follow you?
My Instagram's best, at Daniel Johnes.
Okay, and that's Johnnes. All right, one last thing. Heritage Radio and the Grape Nation will be in Norwalk, Connecticut this Friday during their Crush Week of Beer, Wine, and Spirits-themed events for an event called Crush at Norwalk Now. Join me for an intimate wine dinner at the Wine Room at Washington Prime this Friday, 10/19 at 6 p.m. If you want more information, get tickets, go to norwalknow.org for more information. That's it for us. Thank you to our guest, Daniel Johnes, who has a lot talk about. Thank you to our engineer, Jeet, and thank you to everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam BenRuby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.